Today on Maine Calling, Public Radio's Ira Glass. Once upon a time, many radio broadcasters sounded the same. Men with baritone, authoritative voices who announced the important news of the day. A group of radio pioneers eventually broke that mold. Our guest today was one of them. When he came on the scene, Ira Glass sounded like someone you might know. He told quirky, non-sequitur stories. He let them unfold. And the public radio audience loved it. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Ira Glass is our guest. He's the co-founder and host of Public Radio's This American Life. We'll ask him about his long career, some of his favorite stories, and to share some nuggets of wisdom. Do you have a favorite episode of This American Life? Do you have a question for Glass about how he approaches storytelling? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and dedicated to creating a community where residents are free to pursue their passions. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The very first episode of This American Life was broadcast November 25th, 1995. Today, the award-winning program is heard by millions, carried by stations across the country, and occupies a unique place in the space between storytelling, entertainment, and journalism. While Ira Glass is the creator of This American Life, as well as its host and producer, and he joins us today. Ira Glass, so excited to have you. Welcome to Maine Calling.
So happy to be here.
And we invite you, of course, to join the conversation. I know you've had a driveway moment while listening to This American Life. Which episodes stand out to you, or are you an aspiring storyteller? Do you want some tips from Ira Glass? Send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And just a reminder that our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one for the Maine Public membership drive. Maine Calling's phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Ira Glass, I understand you're going to be in Portland tomorrow. Have you been here before?
I have been there before, but only for like just a day or two. Never had a long stay. And generally, I've been there basically just to give speeches or teach a class at the Salt Institute.
Okay, well, tell us about the class, the show that you're doing. What is the idea behind it?
Well, the show is called Seven Things I've Learned, but that's actually just the title is just an excuse to tell seven stories that are kind of fun to tell, you know, on a Saturday night. So what the show is I stand on stage and I've got an iPad where I can play clips and audio and video, and I tell a bunch of stories in the style of the radio show. And so if you like the radio show, it's like hearing the radio show, except I'm standing in front of you and you can see me saying the words.
Oh my goodness.
For some people is disconcerting, and I guess people get used to it.
Well, you know, I think for so many public radio listeners, it's been as though This American Life has always been there. You know, there's a whole generation that doesn't know life before This American Life. But take us back to its creation, because I'm guessing that, first of all, it was very unusual for its day. And second, I'm guessing that the original pitch was not something like, I want to tell kind of meandering stories about people you've never heard of. How about it? And make it a national show. How did you pitch this idea originally?
I think it's funny. I have to take a second to remember. The original pitch was there's a kind of story that we would do now and then on All Things Considered in Morning Edition, which would be these like longer stories where you would get to know the people in the stories, you know, you just would get caught up in like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to this person? And I just thought that there could be a whole show of that stuff. And at the time that I was doing this, I was a producer for, or a reporter for All Things Considered Morning Edition. And so I was going out and doing these documentary stories where I would go to places and the stories would have funny moments and emotional moments and all. And I just thought like this could be a thing to do a show that's just this and not the news. And then the other element was that I was also producing commentators on the radio, like David Sedaris. I was putting his commentaries on Morning Edition. And so that was the other element that we would have those two things,
So
those
there
two
was
different
already a
kinds of
little
stories.
bit of a space for things that were like not hard news, not direct, straightforward, who, what, where, when, how, you know, stories.
There was like I got assignments like NPR sent me into a high school that was trying to reform and fix the way that they were teaching. And I filed stories every few weeks for a year as we watched them trying to do all these reforms, some of which did work, but honestly, most of which did not work. And it was interesting, it was interesting to, and you just got to know the people, you got to know the teachers, you got to know the kids, and got to follow them over time. And because it's a school, it kind of had everything in it, you know?
You saying
So, yeah.
most of which did not work kind of reminded me of something I wanted to talk to you about, which is you're sort of not just upfront, but talk a lot about what it is to be a creative person and what it is to start out as a creative person. There's so much emphasis today, I think, on young people and young innovators and young savants and you were not a natural. You did not come fully formed into the public
No.
radio universe as the Ira Glass we know today. And you're pretty honest about that.
No, I am very honest about that. Like partly because I feel like there's a lot of people who are like I was, and it just took a long time before they get good or got good. Like I had been working in public radio at NPR, like as in different jobs as an editor and doing this and that, a production assistant. But for me to be on the air, it took me a decade before I was any good. And in fact, in the talk that I'm giving tomorrow on stage, one of the things I do is I play a story, like not from year one or year two or year three or year four, but from year eight. And I'm still terrible. Like it's awful. And
Are you
like it,
objectively terrible, or does Ira Glass just think Ira Glass is terrible?
I play it for an I bring documentary evidence. This is not some weird reverse humble brag. I play for an audience. Judge for yourself. And there's no question about it.
You worry that today there isn't the space for young people to sort of be bad for a while before they get good?
I mean, it's interesting. There's advantages and disadvantages of today. I think there is the space to be bad, and you can't help but be bad at first. Like you just can't. Like you just nobody springs fully formed. What's better about today than when I was like, you know, 18 and 20 and 25 is that anybody can like make something and get it out in the world and get reaction to it. And you know, the most important thing if you're like learning to do something is to just do a volume of work, to just to make one thing after another after another after another, and like and with no money for production and using your phone as your camera or your phone as your, you know, audio recorder, like you can make stuff that's pretty high quality and to look at and just get it out in the world and get reactions and try and try and try. So that's an advantage of today. I mean, I know people don't often say good things about the internet, but that is definitely one of them.
Yeah, more opportunities for, I was going to say young journalists, but young storytellers that they don't have to wait until they are hired by a station to get to do their work. And that's a really big advantage. I'm going to fangirl a little bit and say there is nothing more enjoyable to me than having to take a road trip when This American Life is airing. And, you know, I think we all know that joy of thinking, oh boy, I timed this right. And I have a
Yeah, that's
long
really
ride and
nice.
I can just listen, and especially if it's a beautiful day. But you know, a generation today, for me, and I'm old enough to have had to time it for when something airs on the broadcast schedule, it's all about podcasts. And it's all about, and I know This American Life is now a podcast. And I'm wondering if in an era of podcasts and then also all sorts of different kinds of storytelling programs like the Moth Radio Hour, if you feel sort of a sense of pride. Say, you know, I kind of started all that. You know, people learned from me and took some ideas I had and rolled with them.
Yes, I do feel a sense of pride. I mean, I feel like I learned to do this style of radio from other people who are experimenting and doing things like it. So it's not like I invented this completely. But putting it together in an hour-long show where there'd be like stories that unfold the ways that these do, where it's like a little movie for radio, you know? And yeah, I feel like our show, we got out there early and kind of proved like, oh, this is a nice way to make a show. And then, yeah, like all the people who heard that and thought like, yeah, that is a good way to do it. Like it's ubiquitous now to a level that I never could have imagined. Like I really never could have, like I just, when we started, like we were such an odd show for public radio and, you know, and partly because of the kinds of stories we were doing, that they were just stories about like everyday people and their lives. And we were applying the tools of journalism to things that were so small and personal. Like that was one of the things that was different. And then it was also different because the tone of it, like the way I was talking to the audience was different than I was trained as to do it as an NPR reporter. You know, it's just like I really tried to sound exactly like myself talking. And then to hear honestly, Tori Malatia, the program director at WBEZ, where I started the show, and I, like, our goal was like, we were like, we know we like this kind of show. And we kind of viewed it as being like, you know, like an indie movie. You know what I mean? You feel like, oh, some people who like this kind of thing will like this. And the notion that we got picked up by as many stations as we did, and then people really did like it, and then it became like the thought that others would like take lessons from it and make other podcasts, it was unimaginable.
I can imagine. Okay, I'm going to ask you the conventional question, but I have to know, do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite story, a favorite This American Life?
I have a couple favorite episodes. Like probably my very favorite is this show that we did called 129 Cars. And it's just we're hanging out in a car dealership for a month. So it's seven reporters reporting. It's like the number of reporters who you send to a war. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big commitment. Seven reporters hanging out in one car dealership in Long Island for a month. And what makes it good is that they have to make this quota of 129 cars by the end of the month. And if they make the quota, they get like a huge chunk of money. They get like $40,000 or $60,000 from Chrysler. And if they don't make it, they don't get the money. But they have to make it because people's salaries depend on it. And, you know, it's a dealer with like mechanics and, you know, it's like a big dealership. And the month before, they didn't make it. And so really, like, if they don't make it this month, like, people are going to have to get fired. And so the pressure's on. And the month is going terribly. And then each of the salespeople has such a specific and fun to listen to personality, and they all have their own theories about how you sell the cars. And then as a piece of reporting, it was wonderful because the dealership let us see the actual books. We were like, we'll do this, but what we really want to see is how much profit are you making on each sale, so we could see the gap between what the salespeople are telling the customers and what's really happening. And what we learned is it's really, really true. At the end of the month, they're really desperate and they really do knock down the prices. And like the truism of like, oh, buy a car at the end of the month, like, was so true. And then it just unfolds in a just like a really lucky way when you're doing documentary stories. You know, we go into a lot of situations and it's just kind of stuff doesn't really happen that's that interesting. But in this case, it's like they get close to making it and then they lose it and they get close again and then they lose it again. And then, like, the person who gets them over the finish line maybe is going to be the guy who's the worst salesman in the whole shop who everybody makes fun of. It's just like a really nice assortment of personalities in a dramatic situation that's just very fun to listen to. It's just like a very natural drama playing out in real time over the course of a month. Like, and so that's just one where we got very, very lucky. And it's one that's like straight up fun. You know what I mean? Like,
why do you think the dealership let you in, let you see the books and let you hang out with them for an entire month like that?
I mean, it's very unusual that a business would do it. And one is that the guy who ran the dealership was like a longtime car guy. And he just had a confidence about his business. He's just like, yeah, I'll show you anything. Like, I know what I'm doing. And he's like, he's a guy my age, and he's a guy in his 50s, and I guess, and he just was confident. And then also, he really hadn't heard of public radio. I mean, we said at the time, I think when we did that show, 5 million people heard every episode of our show. And you can say that, but if you've never heard of the show, if you don't listen to public radio, if you don't g listen to podcasts, it's kind of very abstract. So it was sort of like a theoretical thing. And then the other thing is, he thought, in some way, maybe somebody will hear the name of our dealership and they'll come and buy a car, which worked. It totally worked. He totally got sales off the show.
Excellent. Now I have to go listen to it. We are speaking with Ira Glass, but you knew that. You recognized his voice. What are your questions for him? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org. We'll be right back.
Good morning, everyone. This is Maine Public. I'm Corey Morrissey here with my colleague Lucy Santerre, taking a couple of moments from Maine Calling to talk about our pledge drive, 1-800-866-1475. It is the third day, I think, Lucy, of our pledge drive,
right.
And it is also a special day, which you had to explain to me on my way in.
I know. Okay. I love Fridays during pledge week because it's New Friend Friday.
Such a great name.
And that's because it's the perfect day for people to join us for the first time as a donor, as a supporter, by calling 1-800-866-1475. Who doesn't like New Friend Friday? I don't know. It's exciting to me. And I was just reading about the history of Fred Rogers helping out with the support for public media by petitioning Congress. And a colleague of mine said, hey, did you know about King Friday? And King Friday is all about remembering dates and being particular. So you have to remember, today is New Friend Friday. It's kind of maybe for those Mr. Rogers neighborhood super fans. So give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 if you love all of public media, if you love television, if you love radio and Maine Public, and what you're hearing right now, Maine
right.
Calling.
Absolutely. And so any donation is matched. So you're double
right.
your money, which is just huge. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. If you haven't ever thought of being a member, hasn't occurred to you. You know, I was just thinking that Jen remarked to Ira Glass a moment ago that she had timed one of her rides was to be just right to listen to This American Life. And I'm thinking, how many people do that across the state of Maine, mm-hmm. listening to Maine Calling? They like, oh, we can get in the car and then, oh, I'll hear the whole episode. 1-800-866-1475. If you are one of those folks and you haven't ever donated or become a member, today's the day. Again, it is New Friend Friday. All donations are being matched. So it's like just I can't even say, think of how many double ways it works, but it's a great opportunity.
That's right. We're talking directly to you. If you're listening, if you're loving the program and you have the spaciousness in your budget to contribute any amount, that could be $10 a month, that could be $12 a month. There's a cool perk that you'll hear about for $12 a month. There can be a whole bunch of different opportunities for you to donate at a level that works for you. And it could be a one-time donation as well. Whatever that amount is, it's being matched today. So $10 becomes $20, $50. $50 becomes $100, and that's thanks to a member challenge fund, which is a generous group of donors who give a little extra to encourage and match your support. Call us at 1-800-866-1475, or you can visit us at memepublic.org/donate. That's really easy to do as well, and you can take a look at the gifts that are available for donors at any level. That's 1-800-866-1475. We're loving hearing people calling in. Again, that's why I love New Friend Friday. It's happening. It's fun.
It's
the
easy.
End of the week.
It's so,
so
easy.
Easy.
We have our volunteers here. You also go to mainpublic.org, where it's a simple way to donate. Again, as Lucy said, you can see that we have these really cool premiums that you might be able to get. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. We'll head right back into Maine Calling, but thank you if you've already given. If not, give us a call.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. My guest today, none other than Ira Glass, the creator and host of the weekly public radio program and podcast, This American Life. Share your comments and questions. You can send a quick email to talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to repeat the number since it's different than the pledge drive number, 1-800-399-3566. 3566. Ira, we have been playing clips that you have created for pledge drives for a long time here at Maine Public Radio. They are among our favorites. So tell us about your relationship with public radio pledge drives.
Well, I mean, like when I first started doing my own show, like I had never been part of the pledge drive because I'd been working at NPR in Washington, where you don't really do pledge modules. And I just thought like pledge modules, pitching for the pledge is like, it really is like the hardest job you can have in broadcasting because it has everything going against it. It's repetitive. You're asking people for money, which nobody wants to hear. And from the moment you start talking, people know what you're going to say. And so I decided, like, I'm going to try to make pledge modules that are at the, like, that just break all those rules and try to do something different each time. Which honestly, like, now that I've been doing them for over 30 years, gets harder and harder
I bet.
Each time. Yeah. It's yeah. hard.
It is hard, but, you know.
Yeah.
Go on. It's very hard. And I think the kind of people who work in public radio aren't the kind of people who talk about money a lot. I mean, it's obvious, yeah. right?
That's why we went into public radio. Exactly. Yeah. I would say to anybody who's listening, like right now, like I really would encourage you to pledge. Like one of the things, you know, like, I mean, I suppose you know this, but like you're not just paying for the local programming on Maine Public, but like a small portion of that money goes to our show and the other shows that are national shows that you hear. And so there are things that we do on our show that are just intensely labor intensive, you know, to find people and run down stories that don't necessarily work out and we don't run them, or, you know, just even to find, like, there was a series of stories we did during the Gaza war where, you know, outside journalists weren't allowed into Gaza by the Israelis. And so you had to do all the reporting by phone. And one of our producers, Hana Jaffe Wald, spent days like trying to find somebody who we could follow, and found like a series of people in these very moving stories that took you inside the war. We did an entire episode with this like really wonderful, precocious 8-year-old girl. And just like you could hear like what it was like for her to live through the war. And doing stuff like that, bringing public radio listeners stuff that you just cannot hear anywhere else, it's just very labor intensive. And when you give to Maine Public, you're funding that. And then I would also just have you examine your own behavior right this second. Like, you're listening to the pledge drive. Right now, you're listening to a pledge pitch. This is literally, like, the least interesting programming we could possibly put out over the air. And you are hearing it. You're sticking around. What does that say about you? When we say, like, oh, you're the person who we're talking to. You're the first time. You're our Friday friend or whatever. You're the first person. I think we all think like, oh, somebody else will give. But I'm saying like, look at your behavior right now. Like if you're listening to me give this pitch, you're a goner. You're a lifer. You're the person we need. So I hope you will like consider calling 1-800-866-1475. I wrote it down when they were saying it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you wrote it down. Now I'm going to give the main calling phone number, though.
Okay, because, so now people are. Yeah, we can move on.
Yeah,
from
but
this
I'm going to have to,
and
even though I say it every day,
else.
I have to look it up to make sure. 1-800-399-3566. And we do have, let's see, we'll go to this call from Michelle in Brunswick. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi. Hey, Ira, it is so great to hear you on our radio here in Maine. I've been listening to you since the late 90s when I lived in Brooklyn. And always made me feel less weird, less alone, and able to relate to others, including this time. So we had a dog, Sam, that we went to great lengths to take care of and to accommodate in her later years. This was before children and having to accommodate to all that. And I remember an episode where you were on a subway in Chicago going to get zebra meat for a dog.
Well, you have the feeling of that story exactly right. Your facts are a little. It was the subway in New York going to get kangaroo meat, and
okay.
and the reason why was because the dog that we had
you.
At the time had digestive problems, where he would become allergic to whatever meat we were feeding him every 4 or 6 weeks, and so then he couldn't eat it, and his whole body would shut down, and it was actually a little scary. And so every 4 or 6 weeks, we'd have to change his diet, and we'd have to cook for him. And so we went through like poultry and went through like chicken, beef, pork, chickpeas, You know, and then finally, like the doctor was like, well, you know, you can get kangaroo meat. I mean, so like another one that we did was rabbit, which there was like a, you know, old Italian, you know, like meat shop, which I would go and buy like 8 rabbits for the week. And you're just spending a fortune on this meat. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was my life with a very high maintenance dog.
Did it work? Did the kangaroo
meat? It totally worked. He lived a long life. Yeah.
And did you have to buy kangaroo meat for the rest of his life?
In the rotation. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, then he would get, then his body would react to the kangaroo meat after a certain number of weeks. And,
oh,
and then we would move back to kind of the beginning of the cycle again. We'd go back to chicken, you know, or tuna, or one of the ones that we had done. Look, I am not proud of this. I'm not proud, like, that we were a family that was spending this much on our dog and cooking for our dog. Like, I in fact, if I had heard about somebody else who was doing it, I really might have felt very judgy by it. And if people are hearing it and judging us, like, I accept that. Like, it's not... it was a lot of money. It was.
Michelle,
but we loved
thank you.
The dog.
You love the dog. Well, I think there are a lot of dog lovers out there who can relate. Michelle, thank you so much for calling in. Here's an email from Jack. I've heard the episode about testosterone a couple times, and I find it fascinating, especially the man who had a condition who lost all of it and started to find everything beautiful. It really got me thinking about nature versus nurture, and if men are the way they are because it's inherent in our biology or it's socialized. The obvious answer is it's both. It's an episode I've really carried with me that I think is super relevant today. Your thoughts?
I agree. That's a great episode. It's funny, like I've just listening back to that episode recently, thinking should we rerun it? It has some very memorable interviews in it. Especially one with a woman who transitioned to being a man, talking about what it was like to get the injections of testosterone, these like much larger injections of testosterone you get that anybody has in the transition. They give you more testosterone than a man usually has, and what it like what it did to like how they perceived the world. And it's funny, but it all feels like it's of a time and it's a conversation from before people were talking about it. It's from 20 years ago. And so that's the delicate thing in rerunning something like that. It very much feels like a time capsule of a thing. But all that stuff is online if people want to like Google it and find it. And maybe we should rerun it. One of the things that we did in that episode that was like a really fun experiment is that we all had on staff, we had our testosterone tested to see how much testosterone each of us had as we were learning about the qualities that higher testosterone gives you. And the person who had the most was not me and was not a man.
So talk to me about this decision-making process. How does this show come to be? Are you all sitting around having a brainstorming session and somebody says, I'm really curious about testosterone?
Kind of. I mean, it doesn't come out of a brain. Like, people go off and find things that they're interested in making. And that show came out of Alex Bloomberg reading about it. And just he had an example or two of like, I think this is interesting for this reason. And then we thought of other ideas to go with it. The way generally our show gets made is that we'll have like one story that we know is good enough to kind of be at the center of a show. Like it's just like this story is special enough that you could build a show around it. And usually we'll end up spending like 3 or 4 months on that story, reporting that story. And then all the other stories will come together in the last month, right before it goes on the air. Like we just look for stuff that we can glue to that one good story is the way it works.
People often ask me and our producers and Main Calling if we ever run out of ideas. And the answer is no, which is surprising because we do, you know, more than 200 shows a year. You've done this American Life, for more than 30 years. Ira, I'm going to ask you if you ever run out of ideas, but I suspect the answer is no, that there's a list somewhere of everything you haven't gotten to yet.
I don't run out of ideas, but it's hard to find an idea that feels good enough to make on the radio. I think somehow like if it's not your job to find ideas for things, like you might have the idea of like, oh, they just kind of like fall on your head, like they're sprinkled like fairy dust and they just pop into your head. But in fact, like getting an idea for something that you want to make is a job, just like the other parts of the job. And you kind of have to devote a part of your day to it and really just decide this is the time that I'm looking for a thing. And then sometimes, like, you know, a friend will say something, you'll be like, oh, that's a good story, you know, but that's much more rare than going out and just looking for something that seems interesting enough, if that makes sense.
Do you get ideas from listeners?
Yes. Yeah, some of our most memorable stories have been ideas that came from listeners. Absolutely. We have an email that people can send to called storypitch@thislife.org if people have stories that they think would be good stories for the radio show.
Storypitch@thislife.com. Can you, at the top of your head, talk about one?
.org. I mean, one of my favorite stories we've ever done was this guy named Myron Jones. And we put it in a show on babysitting. And basically the story that he wanted to pitch was like, oh, this funny thing happened when I was a teenager. And his sister, who was a little older, this is in Buffalo, New York, this is in the 40s or 50s. He was an older guy. And he said basically, like, because he was a boy at like 12 or 13, he was allowed to kind of roam the neighborhood at night and whatever. And his sister, who was 3 or 4 years older, was not, because she was a girl. And it was like kind of a traditional Catholic neighborhood. And traditional, they were raised by their mom. Their dad wasn't on the scene, and so to get out of the house, his sister made up this family that she claimed that she was babysitting for, called the McCrearys, and then the lie got more and more elaborate over the course of months, until finally there was a point where she's like, well, you know, the McCrearys have like a summer cottage. And so, like, you know, like, they want to take the kids to the summer cottage and they want me to babysit with them there for a week. And then she would leave for a week and go to with her friends to the beach. But the mom naturally was like, well, I'd like to meet the McCrearys. And then she had all these lies that she had to invent on why that could never happen, how he worked for the FBI. And like, and it got more and more elaborate. And so he pitched it as a funny story, and we did. But then once we got into the interview, it was just very interesting to me, these two kids trying to, who had to deceive their mom this way. And when he described his relationship with his mom, more and more the story became about who was this mom. And in fact, his mom was just a very unusual person who was not, like the story that I remember, like, that he came up with in the middle of the interview was like, at some point when he was like 11 or 12, his mom was like, well, I talked to Father so-and-so and he's ready to put you in the orphanage. And he said to his mom, Mom, I'm not an orphan. Like, you're alive. And she's like, no, it'll be way better for you there. And she sent him away to an orphanage, which, like, of course, broke his heart. But in retrospect, he realized, like, she was like a very needy, dependent, I don't know. She was a little bit touched. And the kids really were having to constantly take care of and manage her, and the McCrearys were just one small part of it. And so this thing that starts off as kind of this little romp really becomes an interesting study of them as kids trying to manage a mom who doesn't really have it all together. It became a very emotional story. And I guess I'm saying all this to say, like, that just came out of, like, him just writing and saying, like, I got this funny thing that happened to me when I was a kid, you know?
And of course, because he wrote to you as an adult, I want to know the answer. How did the kids turn out? I mean, did they turn out to be storytellers themselves? Did they have interesting lives?
Both of them, yeah, they're wonderful. Yeah, they're wonderful. But it's interesting, like, the sister who stayed with, who, like, never got sent away to the orphanage, had a much more problematic relationship with their mom their entire lives until their mom died. And then Myron, the older guy, he became like a union organizer and, like, traveled the world. And he was like a very charismatic, like, wonderful man.
So interesting. Well, I'm sure you recognize the voice of the person we're speaking with today on Maine Calling. This is Ira Glass, the founder and producer and host of This American Life. What are your questions for him? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Ira Glass on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Happy Friday, everyone. My name is Lucy. I'm here with my colleague, Corey, and we're taking a couple of minutes in your day, in your main calling listening experience, to talk about our spring fundraiser. It's New Friend Friday, which means all first-time donations are being matched by the Member Challenge Fund. That means $5 becomes $10, $20 becomes $40, and so on. And the way to make that match happen, the way to become a new friend, is by calling 1-800-866-1475 or by visiting us at mainpublic.org and clicking on the big easy red button on the top of our website. And I'm enjoying listening to this Ira Glass interview with Maine Calling. And fun little fact, we're in our Portland studio and we can see Ira through the glass in the studio next to us. I had to say that. I'm sorry. But we're also enjoying the show. So if you, you know, when you enjoy Maine Public Radio, when you enjoy all of the programming on Maine Public Television, think about what that value is in your life and consider donating today by giving us a call at 1-800-866-1475.
Yeah, I mean, 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. A couple of shout outs first to Ira, who did a little bit of a pledge drive mentioned for ourselves. We love that. We have a team of volunteers here who are answering the phones, ready to take your call. Again, 1-800-866-1475. You know, Lucy, it is, you know, shows like This American Life. You listen, you'll laugh, you'll cry, and it's only possible. Shows like that, shows like Maine Calling, are only possible by donations from individuals like you. And that is the, I always find the funny thing about public broadcasting is that and how we are run. We are a nonprofit, and it is one call after another which makes a difference. And if you could make a difference right now by calling us at 1-800-866-1475.
That's right. And you were touching on the breadth of content that is available all across the radio. It doesn't really matter when you tune in, but I feel like the name of the game is variety.
Yeah.
You're going to get news, you're going to get storytelling, you'll get drama on television or on some radio programs. There's storytelling, there is just amazing music all across the board. And again, like Corey said, all of that is possible because of community support. So now more than ever, we need your support, and every contribution that you make makes a huge difference.
Yep.
So if you've been tuning in and you haven't contributed yet, today is the day. Today is the day, Friday, May 1st, New Friend Friday.
Absolutely. New Friend Friday, as Lucy said, all donations are being matched. So whatever you're comfortable with, consider donating today. It's doubled, which is a huge opportunity. 1-800-866-1475. If you haven't ever been a member, there's never a better chance than to do it right now. And also 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. And I think there's also that sense of, you know, when you are then listening to our programming, listening to a radio show, you're like, hey, that's me. I can see myself in it. I supported that. I'm showing, you know, it's not love, it's appreciation, it's whatever your emotion is. It's time to tap into that. Call us, 1-800-866-1475. You can also go online to mainpublic.org, where you can donate safely, securely, and see some of the nice thank you notes that we have. We're going to go right back into Maine Calling, but if you've already donated, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our guest today, Ira Glass. You know him from the long-running and extremely popular radio program, This American Life. Ira is appearing in Portland tomorrow. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email if you're quick to talk@mainpublic.org. Again, the number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Abby, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, Abby. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen and Ira. I just wanted to thank Ira for so many incredible episodes. My favorite is the library, where the homeless family is really taken in by the library, and you go to the library that's half in Canada and half in the United States, and that one just really, really touched me. But I'm calling to also thank Ira because you were incredibly helpful to my daughter, Theo, who was a founding producer at The Daily, at the New York Times. And you just called them and said, I'd like to come in and chat with you. And I just thought, that's such a generous, wonderfully interesting supportive thing to do. So thank you very much. And the Daily has been doing pretty well. So you deserve some credit for that.
Well, that's really nice of you to say all these things. Thank you for saying these things. And happy to do that for Thea.
Abby, thanks for your call. We will move to Bev in Lincolnville. Hi, Bev. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I just have a quick question for Ira. You told the interesting story about the dealership that you spent a month with. But if you said, I didn't hear the conclusion of that, did they reach their quota for the month?
Oh, my God, it's a spoiler. I'm not sure. I mean, I could tell you, but I'm not sure I want to say on the radio in case that people are hearing this and might want to, like, you can listen for free to the episode. Just Google This American Life 129 Cars and it'll get you. I think I'm not going to say yet.
Yeah, I don't want you to tell me either, Ira, because I was ready to cover my ears if you were going to give the answer. So, yeah, I don't want the spoiler. Bev, I'm sorry. We're not going to answer your question.
Too.
That may be a first on Maine Calling, where we just have said, no, we're not going to answer your question, Bev. Thank you for your call, though. We have an email
She's
here.
Like, all right, that's it. Cancel my membership. That's it. Cancel my membership. I was a monthly donor. Forget it. I'm out.
An email here from Seth. My favorite episodes are those that are true portraits, i.e. the rest stop episode. I'm wondering if the current political climate has made it more difficult for you as producers to find the space to tell the stories that carry less weight. Do you feel obligated to be truth tellers in a world where the line has become increasingly blurred, and does that distract from your ability to focus on more small town American portraits?
It hasn't stopped our ability to focus on those stories. And in fact, like a year or two ago, like we noticed as a staff, we were doing so many stories that were about the news and that were about big kind of like heavy newsy things that even we just felt like we would just want the show to be more fun. And so now we really consciously are in a project of doing both. Like, I just think like as people making the show, but also as listeners, like we like making those little personal stories, and they're really satisfying to listen to on the radio. Like, there's a certain kind of story you can do on the radio about a person that just gets to you in a way that's different than something online or something on TV or something in a book. And so like we absolutely still feel committed to that. And I think, like, in a weird, I mean, this is like a very grand thing to say, but like in a moment where like the world is turning upside down, I feel like those stories feel even better than they did before. So
why do you think that is? Why do you think that stories on the radio hit you in a different way than reading them in a book or seeing them in a movie even?
I mean, there's just something about the intimacy of not seeing someone that just gets to you. If somebody is talking from the heart and about something that really means something to them, and you hear them talk on the radio, like it's just hard not to connect to them. Like, no matter who they are, how different from you than they might be, like there's just this immediate connection. And TV, you can kind of feel the industrial machinery that gets you there, and also you see them, and so you bring associations to how they look and if they're, you know, like, and what they're wearing, and you just like there's just associations for everything, and on the radio it's just very pure, and it's something like, you don't even have to be like a genius radio producer to like get tape that has that feeling. Like, you know, we can send out, back when we had interns, you know, we could send out the intern, and like it's just built into the medium, and so it's just a special power. It's been very sad to see podcasting move towards video. Because I get that people want to watch video, but you're losing something by having video podcasts. And when you lose the invisibility of radio, I just think you're losing something that's real.
We'll go to Billy Bob calling from Stonington. Hi, Billy Bob. Go ahead.
Hey, Ira. Love your program. But I want to bring up the subject of like you put it in your speech every two or three seconds, and people can't talk anymore without like. What's going on with that?
You are correct. How do you find it annoying?
I find it bizarre.
I don't know. Like, see, I just did it. Oh my God, I just did it without even thinking. I think that this is just the way that I talk for whatever reason. And I'm kind of stuck with it.
I'm guessing, Billy Bob, I don't claim it. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
I don't claim that it's good. It just is the way I talk. What were you going to say, Jen?
I was just going to say, I'm wondering if you two are in different generations.
Dude, I'm 67 years old. I'm an old man. I'm talking to you with gray hair here.
Well, I'm 84.
Uh-huh.
I wonder, Billy Bob, if there's something that people who are in their 80s now said or say that people the generation above don't like.
I can't remember anything that has ever taken over the language this seems to have.
Mm.
Excuse me.
Interesting.
I just want to say I respect your point of view on this, and I would be a better person if I could eliminate the word like from my speech. And for the rest of my time here on Maine Public, I'm going to try to do it. and my apologies for annoying you.
Billy Bob, thanks for calling. I think other people get accused of saying, you know, too often, you know. So that might be, you know,
too.
But you know, there you go. But you know, Ira, you are talking about trying to be natural and trying to be regular and trying to be your true self. And if you're stopping yourself every time you say something or you say like or you know, then it might come across as stilted or fake or false. So that's a little bit of a conundrum, too.
That is a conundrum. I mean, I'd have to really train myself. I'd have to make it a conscious project, you know. And between all the other little projects.
An email here from Jay. A favorite episode of This American Life is the one featuring your cousin, musician Philip Glass. Did you grow up knowing him well? Is this the only episode where you interviewed a family member?
I did not know him at all growing up. I grew up in Baltimore, and Philip is older than me. He's closer to Billy Bob's age. And so he was already in New York making music. He's a classical composer, for people who don't know. And so I didn't know him at all. He was just kind of this distant figure. And then at a certain point, 20 years ago, I moved to New York. And then I would see him all the time, actually. Like we went on a trip to Italy together. Like, I finally got to know him as an adult. But he was not around at all. The one way that he figured into our lives is that when I moved. I can't remember if it was to Chicago or somewhere, like, and basically I wanted to be in public radio. I remember that my parents were very much against me working in public radio because they just thought, like, well, you know, you'll never make any money, and what, like, why do that? And I remember somebody told my dad, well, you remember, like, Philip went off, like, to become a composer, and that worked out. I was just like, that is a really high standard. You know what I mean? Like, he's writing symphonies that are played around the world. I don't want to have to, like, be judged by that standard. Like, no.
I understand your parents wanted you to be a doctor.
Very much so. Yeah. That's a good, dependable job.
How long did it take them to accept and even maybe be proud of you?
They were proud of me, but they disagreed with my choices. My mom told me, like, you win, you don't have to go to medical school, when I was 41 years old.
Tina in Camden thinks it's bizarre that anyone should tell Ira Glass what he can and cannot say. So Tina is on your side here. She's standing up for you.
Thank you, Ira Glass, Tina.
Has been our guest. Oh my gosh, what a treat today was. Thank you so much for joining us on Maine Calling.
Good morning, everyone. Corey and Lucy here again, taking a few moments of your time. And Lucy, Jen took the words right out of my mouth. What a treat to have Ira Glass on Maine Calling.
It was really special.
It's really special. It's so fun to hear his voice and and just answer some of the great questions that some of our audience called in. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. It is the third day of our spring fundraiser. We have a team of volunteers here who have taken a few hours out of their day. So let's try to get them busy. What do you say, Lucy?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. We want to hear the phones ringing, and we might even hear a bell ding. And that bell means that someone has become a member for the first time.
Yep.
It is the day to become a member. It's New Friend Friday. That means all first-time donations are being matched. That means $100 becomes $200, or $10 a month for a year becomes $20 a month for a year. Think of that impact. And so that's just a really great incentive for you to make the call for the first time. I mean, we're radio, and you get to call someone and talk to someone. That's kind of special.
It is.
The volunteers are so friendly, and it would be really nice to just get to chat with them, tell them what your favorite programs are, and find out about some of the gifts that are available for different donation levels. What is one gift that we're staring right at, Corey?
Well, there is this really cool thank you gift. So it's our way of thanking you for donating. And it's a pair of Maine Public Lupin socks. Appropriately named, I think. They're beautiful. They're green with a blue sky. They are branded for Maine Public. You can go out and about. I think, Lucy, if you had these, you probably wouldn't wear shoes. You would just walk shoeless for a little bit.
They're for your picnic. You have a big picnic blanket, and you show them off.
You absolutely show them off. You can see those at mainpublic.org, where you can also donate safely and securely and take a look at this thank you gift. But again, the thank you gift is a wonderful thing, but also the way that you feel once you call and you donate, that's incredible. 1-800-866-1475 is a number to call. If you love Maine Calling, which you're listening, I'm assuming you do, and you love our reporting, the entertainment, our music, pretty much every way that you interact with Maine Public through the course of your day and your week, think about that, and think about the fact that we are a nonprofit and we are only fueled by your call. 1-800-866-1475. Become a member today.
It feels really great to support Maine Public. And, you know, it's a beautiful day today on this Friday. There is, you know, there's the classic spring weather coming, but it's going to be a beautiful weekend. Imagine starting your weekend off on the right foot, knowing that you are making community supported public radio and public media possible. You'll walk outside in the sun or maybe under the stars, and you'll be thinking about how you're contributing to local journalism in your community. You're thinking about how you're going to be part of a community of people who come together to make public media possible. We appreciate your support, and we need your support. So call us at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainpublic.org/donate and become part of the community. Become part of the neighborhood, if
Absolutely.
You will.
Oh, yeah. We're working in that theme. But it's true. You know, Lucy, we are a community. And when you think about community, you think about Maine Calling, just serving the entire state of Maine. And also you think about Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Classical, and our four television signals. We're free across the state of Maine. So not everyone can necessarily afford to support. If you can, you're not only supporting the music and the entertainment and the news for yourself, you're supporting it for your neighbor. So you really are being a neighborly thing. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call.
And think about all of the times that you've tuned into Maine Public Radio or maybe Maine Public Television. I, for one, was a PBS kid, and I had no idea how any of that worked when I was a kid, enjoying Arthur, enjoying Zoom, and all of those fun programs that are so iconic. And right now, I am thinking about all the children who are needing educational content and television, who are learning their ABCs, learning to count to 10, and who are learning that from PBS Kids. I'm thinking about all the children who are, you know, getting exposed to insightful information as they're sitting in the backseat of their parents' cars.
Yep.
That's really valuable for our community. And if you find that, when you find, you know, value in something like that, you decide to contribute
to
it.
You want to support it.
You want to support it.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And you can do that by calling 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainpublic.org/donate.